The How Not to Suck at Divorce podcast cannot be copied or rebroadcast without consent. This podcast does not contain legal advice. The information provided on the podcast and the resources available are not intended as and shall not be construed or understood to be legal advice.
Okay, so today's episode of How Not to Suck at Divorce is a very special re-air episode. So you're going to hear from us from, oh my gosh, when was this? When did this initially air? Over a year ago, right?
Really? I don't know. I mean, I just remember how important this episode was. And when we were going to actually put it together, both of us were like, do you think people want to hear about this? And then I had this client go through it and I was like, let's just see it. And it was so popular. It was amazing.
How can they actually ascertain whether this is their marriage or not, or if just their whole life is kind of out of whack?
Most people's problems are failed attempted solutions.
And this is How Not to Suck at Divorce.
So, okay, clearly we don't have our act together enough to know when this initially aired, but we interviewed one of our favorite women, Dr. Randy Heller. And we talked about the topic of, originally we called this episode, Is It My Marriage That's Making Me Miserable? Because, guys, like, let's face it, right now it's summertime for everybody. So whether you are feeling not so great about life and you have pressure to feel good because you're trying to entertain kids or, you know, whatever, or you're not feeling the pressure to feel good and things are just really overwhelming, I think that it's helpful to listen to some of the insight that Dr. Randy Heller gives as far as where this unhappiness could be coming from, because spoiler alert, it might not be your marriage.
Right. It might be something else completely. And I always say to people too, I mean, it's summer. It's beautiful outside most days. People are doing fun things. I'm sure you're invited to a bunch of parties this summer. There's things to look forward to. But if you're waking up and you're thinking to myself, gosh, another day, or you've got that sick feeling in your stomach and it's happening over and over, this is the episode for you. Because you will figure out and be able to pinpoint with Dr. Heller's information what it could be that's bothering you. And we're not saying it's maybe your marriage. It may be, you know, you're upset about something else, but at least Dr. Heller gives us the tools to identify potentially what's driving this stomach feeling.
Exactly. So give it a listen and hang in there. We are coming to you very soon. God, it feels like we were just yesterday wrapping season 3. And now it feels like tomorrow is July when we're already going into season 4. But we are here for you every single day. Please reach out, follow us on social media, and give Dr. Randy Heller your ears right now, because she is a wise woman. And let's learn a thing or two.
Okay, everybody. So today's episode is called What's Making You Miserable?
Wow, such an uplifting title.
Yeah, well, here's the thing, guys. There's so much that goes on in our day-to-day lives between work, friends, carpool, Zoom meetings, lice checks, etc. It can be difficult to ascertain where the unhappy or unfulfilled emotions are really coming from.
And we've received so many DMs on Instagram about exactly this topic. So we have brought back the absolutely wonderful Dr. Randy Heller to give our listeners some action steps that they can take to help uncover the root of their unhappiness.
Don't forget who Dr. Randy Heller is. She is the unicorn. She has her PhD in family therapy. She's a licensed mental health counselor, marriage and family therapist, reunification therapist, and she's a divorce mediator. Talk about somebody who knows what they're talking about in the divorce space. We are thrilled to have her back on with us because her other episodes in season 2 were such hits. Dr. Randy Heller, hello there. We're so excited that you're back with us today.
Hi, Morgan and Andrea. It's so great to see you and be here with you. Thanks for having me back.
Okay, Dr. Heller, let's dig in. We know lots of people are miserable in life. Some of these people are miserable because they're in a marriage that's not working. Others are miserable because of a myriad of other things in their lives. So what do they do? Where do they start? And what I mean by this and why I think this episode is so helpful for people is I've actually recently had clients tell me that they were so miserable that the first thing they did was blame themselves. And some even looked into rehab or inpatient for themselves when in reality, they found out that really it was their marriage that was driving them crazy.
Yeah. So Morgan, that's quite a dilemma. And I, of course, as a therapist, I see people on the front lines who are just not happy, just not satisfied with whatever is going on in their life or a myriad of things going on in their lives, like you said in your intro. So to begin, what I always suggest, one, is that they've taken the greatest first step by coming in, identifying something's not right and they want to get help with it. They want to figure it out. And to my mind, that's what therapy is. It's an exploration of what's going on in your world, right? So, you know, looking at it from a systemic perspective, I always suggest that clients do what I call a holistic assessment. So first and foremost, I want them to look at the physical, the mental, and the relational all together, not just independent of one another, because nothing is independent. Everything's interrelated. So I will encourage them to go for a medical exam. You know, I am a doctor, but I'm a talking doctor. I'm not a physical medical doctor. So I always suggest that people go for a medical exam first and make sure that everything is working as best that it can. You know, stress plays havoc on the body plays havoc on the mind. And again, it's all interrelated. So I want them to go for a medical exam. And at the same time, I want them to do kind of a personal scan. So I want them to look at, is there a history of depression and anxiety in their family? How do they manage stress? How is their sleep, nutrition, their libido, their substance use? Because oftentimes when people have all of these experiences, they're turning to substances to feel better. And at the end of the day, they don't.
Right. They're like a Band-Aid, I would imagine, yeah. Right? It's like you want that immediate quick fix. And I think especially like, I know for me, because I went through this, we feel bad, right? And we're like, oh, I'm uncomfortable feeling bad. I don't like this. I don't like this. And so I'm sure it's easy for people to say, I'm going to have an extra glass of wine tonight, or I'm going to do this, or I'm going to do that. And then you kind of, this is like a conversation we had with one of our guests last season, Morgan, when we were talking to Dr. Meg about this and just the epidemic of people, especially during the COVID year, who have indulged too much in alcohol or, you know, things that we kind of dabbled in before, but now it's like, I don't like the way I'm feeling. And so we keep getting deeper into these Band-Aids that are making the problem probably a whole lot worse.
Yeah. And as you say that, Andrea, I'm reminded of the very thing that I tell most of my clients. So most people's problems are failed attempted solutions, right? So I can't sleep. So I'm going to drink a glass of wine and I'm going to go to sleep. Problem is, a couple of 3 hours later, you're wide awake because your blood sugar drops and you don't get good sleep. And even if you do fall asleep, you're not in that deep level of sleep. So failed attempted solution, right? I'm going to go to the mall and spend all my money because I'm worried about my financial problems. Right. Or I'm going to, in the worst of cases, I'm going to find another person to make me happy because the person I'm sleeping next to doesn't. Right. So that all of those things are failed attempted solutions. So I want to help them to explore, okay, what are potentially better solutions. But first we have to know, are they getting enough exercise? Do they have hobbies? And who's in their support system? What are their patterns? And is this most important, is this a new circumstance or is this something that's been going on for a long time? I think that's really key. And when is the problem not a problem? So in what context is it happening? Is it all the time? Do you wake up feeling badly and it carries on through the day? Or are there certain circumstances and certain contexts within which you're feeling pretty okay?
Art, when you said, how do we, when the problem is not a problem, that kind of makes me think of people who just get that kind of itch. People who are like, I'm not happy. And, you know, and then they kind of lean into that. I'm not happy. I'm not happy. But really, there are things within your control that you can do to, I'm not saying that this is across the board. I want to be careful not to make a generalization, but I do think that there are times that we almost like we look for problems instead of looking for things that we can do to help a situation and make sure that you have really exhausted all of these efforts before you're like, that's it, it's my marriage, I gotta go.
For sure. And what I'm trying to help them to understand when I'm asking, when is the problem not a problem, is that it's not a global, I'm always unhappy. You know, people have a tendency to extremes. And I want to help them to find hope in the reality that there are times when the problem doesn't appear to be a problem. And when they're feeling lighter, or they're feeling more jovial, or they're feeling better about their life and their circumstances. So it doesn't have to be kind of an all or nothing thing. And once they know that physically everything's okay, then we're going to go on to the mental health aspect and the relational aspect.
This makes me think of something that we talked about when you and I had our call earlier this week. We were talking about this, and I remember saying, gosh, Randy, I wish there was something tangible that we could offer people that they could do to help figure this out. And then, much to my delight, you're like, well, there is. Yeah. So talk to everybody about this pie chart that you've developed, because I think that this is, I mean, for people who are looking for an action step, guys, pull your car over and listen up.
Yeah. So there is kind of a strategy, because I think, and for me, I think that when people are able to see something concrete in front of them, I know that that works for me. Then they can kind of look at it. It's kind of like looking at a graph instead of just hearing about numbers or seeing numbers. If you look at a graph, you can really tell, okay, yeah, this is better than this, right? Because one's higher than the other, or one's bigger than the other. And so the pie chart. So in terms of this scan, what I'm encouraging people to do is, and you can all do it with me if you want, take out a piece of paper. And I ask people, of all of the various life circumstances, like family, work, your primary relationships, your home life, your self-care, which is a really big one because most people don't pay attention to that, I ask people to do a couple of things, to identify all of those things and to list. So what percent of your time is presently dedicated to each out of 100%? So suppose you draw a circle, and you first, before you do that, you're going to list, okay, my family, my work, my primary relationships, my time at home, and my self-care. What percent of my time is presently dedicated to that? And then you're going to identify the percentage of time. So if you're spending 50% of your time at work, that's going to be half your pie, and you're going to divide it in half, and half your pie is going to be work. Well, how are you spending the other amounts of your time? And so if you have 10% on your primary relationship, and you have 5% on self-care, you're going to visually see that you're not spending enough equal amounts of time on everything that's important. And I don't know that you can do that all the time. So simultaneously, you're not going to be dividing up your time equally around all the things that are important. But we want to look at globally, what percent of your time are you dedicating to the things that are important to you? And when you have that in a pie chart and it looks out of balance, it's going to be pretty indicative to you that your life is out of balance. And so then the idea is, okay, what needs to be in place to move those things around? What would you like to see happening differently? How can you reach and raise the level of satisfaction and balance in your time and in the time that you dedicate to the things that are important to you? You know, what's missing? What would you like to see more of? A bigger piece of the pie, less of, a smaller piece of the pie. So right now, if half your pie is at work and 5% of your pie is on personal well-being, then you kind of know you want to move that around, right? And change that up a little bit. And those are the kinds of things that we talk about in therapy, because I think it's really important to identify, okay, what's not working and how do we work to change that?
It's so funny because I'm sitting here and Andrea's next to me. She's drawing her pie chart and I'm looking over her shoulder, and the majority of her time besides her children is work. And I know, and I haven't drawn mine out. She handed me the pen to start drawing mine. And I know that it's going to be a lot of work. So, you know, it's so interesting to compartmentalize this like that. And, you know, one of the things that I want to dive into with this pie chart is you said to us that sometimes it's not even a person's marriage. Sometimes it's the person that's miserable. So how do you take this pie chart and figure out like what to do?
Well, and connect it to actually what you just said. If half of your entire pie chart is work, then there's not that much room left over because you have to take care of yourself before you can even take care of your partner. And Morgan and I are both in happy relationships and you have children. So I feel like
we're drowning,
but we're kind of like, I think we're getting into something here that we are fixing all the problems in America in this one episode, but we all focus. So we're forced to focus so much on our careers, right?
And the irony is sometimes people tell me that they're most comfortable in their workplace, that it's the one place where they feel
definitely
most competent, most confident, they get most validation, they get support from their peers and their colleagues. And so oftentimes people dive into something like we were talking about before, substances to replace or substitute for the things that they're not getting satisfaction out of, right? So when you look at that, you have to think about, okay, what is it that work provides me that leads me to want to spend half of my life there? Mm-hmm. You know, in addition to, of course, you know, there's money, but what else? What else does it provide for me? So it provides validation. So where else on that pie can I get my validation? Where else on that pie can I get that feeling of competence and self-confidence? And that's where we want to shift things around, right?
So when somebody creates this chart for themselves, what do you want them to look for? And then how can we create a healthier pie chart for our lives so that somebody who's going through this, how can they actually ascertain whether this is their marriage or not, or if just their whole life is kind of out of whack?
Yeah. So there's a couple of things embedded in that question, Andrea. So part of it is, as I said, looking at, okay, what do you get from the thing you spend the most time on? And where else can you get that? And how else can you get that? So is it about, you know, making sure you get to a massage once a month, or making sure you get to, you know, doing your mani and your pedi, or making sure that you're with some girlfriends or guy friends for lunch, or, you know, that you are spending quality time with your partner. So looking at the things you get from the place you spend most of your time, and where else can you get it that would also increase your level of happiness and joy and satisfaction in other areas? Because again, in talking about extremes, anything we do too much of is not okay. So that's number one. And really trying to say, okay, what needs to be in place in order for me to feel an increased level of satisfaction in these different areas? And, you know, maybe it's one thing a day regarding each area. Like, okay, I'm going to make sure that I have a 10-minute conversation at the end of the day with my significant other. Or I'm going to make sure that for 15 minutes before my kids go to bed, we're just going to play. Or I'm going to make sure that I'm going to get up in the morning and I'm going to do some yoga and meditation because that's personal care. So I'm going to expand my degree of satisfaction in these different areas. So here's the important piece. So if you're doing all of that and you're still waking up in the morning miserably and you're going to bed not feeling that level of satisfaction that you want to, well, then there's a couple of things. Again, I want to go back to the medical. We want to go to, you know, a well-known psychiatrist to look at brain chemistry and is there something going on? We might, if you're a woman, you might want to go to your gynecologist and look at your hormone levels and see where you're at regarding that. And then you're going to go, I hope, to see your therapist. And you're going to say, okay, I'm doing this and I'm doing that. I'm doing this and I'm feeling like I'm putting the effort in and I'm feeling worse because I'm not feeling any better. So that's where you look at everything that you're doing that's in your control. And then you're going to look at the things that you don't feel like are in your control.
I love that, Dr. Heller. And one of the things I have a question on is, so let's just say one of our listeners did their pie chart and, you know, listeners with younger to middle-aged kids in a marriage, it's hard to spend time, you know, with the significant other and have quality time. But let's just say that their pie chart has a really kind of small area for their significant other. So they're looking around the pie chart and they're like, okay, I could do better at working out. I could do better at self-care. I could do better at work. And then they get to the significant other and they're like, yeah, I could probably do better, but like, there's something in me that doesn't want to put in the effort. Is that a red flag?
I'd say that's a very bright red flag, Morgan. Yes. So again, if you're looking at the things that you're doing that are uplifting and feeling good, and then at the end of the day, you look at the person lying next to you and you say, not so happy here. And no matter what you do, there's still something missing. You know, many of us know that feeling, you know, it just is. And sometimes you can explain it and other times you can't. So that's the time where I suggest to people that they see a marriage counselor, and, you know, try to work through some of that blah feeling that you have. Oftentimes couples get overwhelmed, couples get stressed, couples get complacent, couples get into patterns that they're just kind of going through the motions. I was working with a couple yesterday and they've got, you know, two kids, one's an infant, one's 2 years old. The husband's in medical school. The wife is in just a very kind of uncomfortable place right now, and they love each other, but they just don't know how to bring joy to their marriage. So that is something in marriage counseling we can work on. Now, if I'm working with a couple where one person is feeling that, like, yeah, I love that person and I want to make things work and I want to, you know, I want to make our marriage as good as it can be and I'm making a commitment to be there, but the other one is kind of halfway out the door and saying, we've done everything and nothing makes me feel good about this person. They're a good person. I love this person as a parent to my child, as a, you know, someone I have a history with, but there's just no oomph. And it's been going on for a long time. That's when I recommend something called discernment counseling. And discernment counseling is a very specialized process whereby couples come in and usually they're kind of on the brink of a divorce and they need guidance on whether or not they're going to end their marriage. Most couples in this circumstance come in with what I call mixed agendas. So one partner is leaning towards divorce and the other person really wants to remain married and see if they can. And so the counselor kind of works not so much as a therapist delving into their own individual issues, but really looking at them as a couple and trying to help them to communicate about what's really going on with them in the context of their marriage. Usually this is like from 1 to 5 sessions, and they're really trying to decide, can we put a divorce, the idea of a divorce, on hold for 30 days, or can we work on how we're going to get divorced?
For those listeners out there that have done the pie chart, they're not quite ready to say, yeah, it's my marriage. And going back to the couple you just worked with yesterday about, they both love each other, they're just trying to make it better. So what are some ideas that couples can do to try to make it better if they're not really there at the divorce yet, just to see, like, can we make this work? What are some of your suggestions?
Yeah, so one of the couples I was referring to, and there are many. So one of them, they have this young baby and they haven't been intimate in a year. And, you know, they just say they're too tired at the end of the day and it's too hard to organize. And so, you know, I talked to them like Nike and I said, just do it.
Right.
Just do it. Cause right now you're just in a habit of not doing it. And you're in a habit of just kind of crawling into bed and going to sleep. And I wonder what's going to happen if you go into bed and you just do it and you find, wow, what have we been missing? So I think it's kind of interrupting the patterns, right? Get a babysitter.
I like that idea. I like what you just said about interrupting a pattern.
Yep.
Because we're all creatures of habit, and we all fall into a pattern, yep. right? Like I come home, I put on my sweatpants, I turn on Netflix, and that is where I stay.
Correct. Correct. Instead of jump in the shower before your partner comes home, put on some makeup.
We're going too far now. We got to keep this realistic.
Yeah, you say lingerie, we're out. I was thinking on putting on nice sweatpants.
I was just going to say, let's say nicer sweatpants.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
right. Okay. But I think it's all about being mindful. So that's key. Being mindful about how am I attending to this person who matters to me? How am I attending to the relationship? Because like the pie chart, we realize we attend to work, we can attend to ourselves, we can attend to our people in our support system, we attend to our kids. And sometimes our partners are the last person we attend to. Now, again, in the cases of, you know, being on the brink, there are some people who just aren't interested in attending to that other person. And if that's the case, then that's something we definitely have to talk about and face. But I think you have to try all these other things first.
Yep. I can speak to both sides of this. I can tell you that when I went through this in my marriage, the idea of going out on a date night made me want to vomit.
Your gut.
Because I was so uncomfortable.
Yep.
It was time to call time of death. We were done. Now, I will say, so I've been in a relationship now for almost 3 years, and we're in couples therapy because we both came from not so great marriages. I don't want to speak for his marriage. We're both divorced. Okay. So there's a lot of unhealthy habits that we've picked up, and we want to make sure that we're doing things right. And one of the things, just to kind of go back to something you said before, Randy, one of the things that I've learned, because the majority of my pie chart is work, that I have to get up early in the morning. So I have that time for me before my kids get up. Right. But then at the end of the day, I have to have that time for us. But if I get the morning time done, so I have the time for me, I'm big into meditation right now, which is such a departure from how I normally am. I don't know what kind of woo-woo train I'm going off of, but like, I love it. I'm a big fan of meditation. So I work out, I meditate, but then at the end of the day, so that I don't fall into that rut of just lying down and zoning out, I'll say like, okay, we're putting down our phones. We're going to look at each other, make eye contact, and we're going to talk.
Yeah.
And it's amazing what talking can do when you're not also on a device and doing something else. That can lead to so much organic intimacy, whether it's emotional, physical, whatever, because you're actually connecting with your person.
Sure.
And it's so funny how that doesn't come natural to us anymore.
And conversely, to your point, I often suggest that people just sit and be together. You talk about meditation and how useful that is for you. Meditation is really beautiful for couples to do together because it just allows you to create a safe space to be together and to connect without having to talk. Because sometimes, you know, men and women are wired very differently, as you know, as we all know. And so sometimes at the end of the day, a man doesn't really want to talk. And I'm being gender specific, but I do find that in my practice, you know. So oftentimes, or even a woman, I know for me, I talk all day for a living. You guys talk all day for a living, right? So sometimes you just don't want to talk. Sometimes you just want to be.
Yeah.
And being together in a quiet, safe space, that creates a beautiful amount of intimacy as well. And I think to your point, Andrea, no devices. That's a big key.
Do you find that that's hard for you, Morgan, to like be like, are you able to do that? And you're like, to like, say, okay, I'm putting down my device. I know that a lot, your work depends on you being on your device.
It is so hard. I will not sugarcoat it. It's awful. But my best advice for anyone is actually taking a walk, putting the devices down. We take a walk. It's amazing how fast an hour goes because you're walking and talking and you get home and you're like, I really like you. I really enjoyed that conversation.
Right. I had no idea that you were going to say that. And that's so funny because Steve and I have recently said, we're going to start walking together again. Because we did it when we were like early dating and like we stopped walking. Yeah. And like, there's something so nice about, no, we don't need our phone. We're just going to walk. I also think, and Randy, I'm curious to know your thoughts on this. What is that correlation between physical movement and our minds? Because if I ever have to have a difficult conversation with someone, it's much easier for me to talk about something when I'm walking than just sitting down face to face. So is there science there?
Well, yeah, I think there is. I think there is, you know, a suggestion that you can change your state in an instant by literally moving from one place to another, because oftentimes we feel stuck, right? Mm-hmm. When we're moving, not only does the, you know, depending on how much movement there is, the brain is releasing endorphins. So that's the kind of natural feel good hormones that we have in our brain. Additionally, though, there's that philosophical changing your state, changing where you are. You know, oftentimes when people come in for therapy, they come in and they sit in the same place every time.
Yeah.
And I will inadvertently help them to move to a different seat, a different placement on the couch. A couple, if they come in, I have them change it up and move in different directions, because that kind of changes the state. It changes the context. And then we are able to, you know, change the way we are. You said something before, Andrea, a moment ago, that's so important. You and Steve used to walk when you were first dating.
Yeah.
And what happens? What gets in the way of those things that people do that they did early on that really got them together and got them enjoying? Now, to be honest with you, there are couples I see where they never had that. But when I'm working with a couple who has had that, my inclination is to lead them to find those things again and rediscover those things that brought them together in the first place, because in the middle of chaotic life, they lose sight of that.
So there's so much here, Randy, and we love having you on. And I want to tell the listeners that are feeling a little unsure about themselves or wondering, is it them? You know, there's hope for you. It's not just automatically you. So what I want to do is I want to recap what we just discussed, and especially for someone who doesn't know why they're miserable, what they can do, and just let me know that we're correct. So what you just talked about, if you don't know why you're miserable, but something is making you miserable, you suggest basically three things. One is making a pie chart. Number two is, after you figure out where that pie chart falls, looking at what you've done to improve the situation or the pie chart, whether that's, you know, exercising more, therapy, couples therapy, et cetera. And then third, analyzing the patterns and trying to break those patterns. Does that pretty much summarize what they can do?
It does, but I would go back to the beginning and start with what I call that holistic assessment. So it's going to be a medical, it's going to be a emotional, and it's going to be a relational assessment, all simultaneously. Because again, sometimes there's some chemistry going on that leads us to not feel well. I mean, we're hearing, you know, as a offshoot of COVID, there's many people who are experiencing depression and anxiety and things that they didn't experience before, subsequent to being ill. So, you know, the viruses and other illnesses play havoc on your mental health as well, can. So a holistic assessment. And then the pie chart is really to get a concrete bird's eye view of what are the areas of your life that are working, what's not working, what's out of balance, and what needs to be in place in order to shift that balance. And then, yes, interrupt the habits, interrupt the patterns, try some new things. And again, if you've done all of that and you're still not really satisfied with your life, then you want to look at, okay, I've done everything that I can that's in my control. What doesn't feel like it's in my control? And even in that regard, those things that appear to be out of your control really are in your control. You just don't know what to do about them. And that's where, you know, further, deeper levels of counseling come in, for sure.
So it seems like once you've done all of the work on your own to make sure you've done your homework, you've done your due diligence, the next step is getting a professional involved, right? Going to therapy and bring someone else in who can give you that neutral and extra set of eyes and ears to help you look at what's going on and help you then make an informed decision. So you're not just jumping off of your emotions and saying, I'm miserable, I have to get a divorce, you know? Right.
Right. And so, you know, the most important part of that, and I keep thinking about it when you say miserable, I'm miserable. First of all, before you do anything, I think we have to define miserable, right? True. What is miserable? And, you know, when are times that I'm not miserable? And, you know, what's there? What's happening? What is in place? And how can I and can I get things in place to be, you know, more satisfied with my life? So I would take it away from that global definition, because I think then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. If we decide we're miserable, then we are, right? Yep. So we have to change that up too. And language has a lot to do with our experiences, for sure.
Oh my God. Randy, you got, I mean, honestly, we need you just to like take over. If there was a way that we could have you help every single one of our listeners,
right, be our life coach, be their life coach, it'd be great.
And maybe us included, if we can get in on that.
Oh, too. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how to speak for you, Morgan, but I'm ready. I'm on a couch right now. I can lie down and you can just help me unpack my entire life.
And speaking of which, Randy, if someone is interested in your services, can you tell everybody where you're currently licensed and how they can find you?
Yeah, so I'm licensed in Florida, Connecticut, and New York right now. Exploring licensure in Chicago because I do.
Bring it on. We're not excited for that.
Work at with all. Ladies and your listeners, and Chicago is a beautiful city. So, so you can reach me at The Family Network, which is The Family, NETWK, at AOL.com. Or 646-717-6718. And I'd be happy to take your call, give you some, you know, ideas, and then we can move from there.
And also, listeners, if you're looking online and you just want to check out Dr. Randy Heller, you can Google Dr. Randy Heller, therapist, and her website will pop up with a gorgeous picture that just goes with that lovely, calming voice that she has.
Thank you so much. And one more thing I want to say to your listeners, nothing happens overnight, right? It's like a crash diet. It doesn't work. So I think for most of my clients, I tell them, you know, you've been doing this for a long time. So it's worth investing some time in really discerning what's going on with you, what's going on in your life. And again, what needs to be different? Because the reality is that nothing different happens unless you do something differently.
I can't tell you how much we appreciate you giving us these words of wisdom. I mean, on a professional level, I'm so grateful because you are adding so much value to our show and helping our listeners. And on a personal level, every time you are on our show, I walk away smarter and more emotionally evolved than how I was prior. So
we're going on walks tonight.
We're going on walks tonight. I am. I'm gonna take the Nike slogan and just do it with my whole life. I'm not going to have sex with everybody in my life. Don't get nervous, Morgan. But I mean, just like, I'm going to get it together. And I feel so motivated. I really do. And I think what you said is so interesting, that being miserable can be a self-fulfilling prophecy. So we have to really look at the things in our life that we can control. And I hope that those of you who are listening who really are in a spot where you are unhappy, please don't lose sight of the things in your life that are working. Because not everything in your life is horrible. And we wish you all so much luck. And please reach out to Dr. Randy Heller.
She's the best.
She will help you.
Thank you, ladies. I'm so happy to be here.
And now, a moment of positivity.
Because we're all about positive thoughts.
And negative COVID tests.
That is right. Segment was my idea. I'll go first. So we are going to do a Let's Be Positive segment on our show. And there's a few reasons for it. Number one is we want you feeling good when you leave our show and leave us until the next season or the next episode. Number two is everyone's going through something. Everyone. So it's really nice to see, you know, something else that's positive out in the world that can potentially bring you back to reality that things will be okay and other people are going through stuff as well. So we decided to do this segment to say, let's be positive. So I'm going to start today. I saw this amazing thing on the news recently, and it was twin boys, I should say, out of what is Brazil. They're conjoined twins. They were conjoined at the cranium or the head, and they're almost 4 years old. And they doctors successfully were able to, through months of preparation and also using virtual reality across the world. So we had a team of doctors in London and a team of doctors in Brazil practicing and getting prepped. They were able to successfully do this surgery on these conjoined twins. And as of right now, the twins, at least from what I can tell online, are doing well. And there's the sweetest picture ever where the twins are both in a bed. You can tell they're both trying to recover. They're not really coherent, but they're holding hands. And if anything says sweetness other than that, I don't know what it is. You know, I'm a sucker for kids and I'm a sucker for animals, but this one took the cake this week. Have you seen anything about it?
No. How old are these kids?
They're almost four, which is really unique from the articles that I've read. They basically said that usually with something this serious, you have to do the surgery earlier for the best successful outcome. But due to COVID and also the complexity, I mean, the doctors apparently were taking, basically doing the surgery without having them there, like practicing over and over again before the surgery even took place. So it was such a big deal. And these little guys are almost four. They're going to celebrate their fourth birthday soon. And just a photo of them, if you guys are looking into what I'm talking about, the photo of them in the bed together with their hands held, because it's the sweetest.
Oi, 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 oi. That's got me. That is something. You got me with them holding hands. I was not so emotionally invested into the story until we got there. And then I went from zero to a million. So God, thanks for that. And I was the one that was like, I don't want to do this let's be positive segment. And now I see where you're going with it, Morgan. I think the people do, including me, could use some positivity, because guys, let's face it. If you're going through a divorce, there's going to be a lot of moments you're experiencing that are not so warm and fuzzy. And that's actually one of the reasons why this podcast was so important to us, because we wanted to be able to offer insight and guidance, but also a break. We wanted to be able to offer entertainment, something that you could think about that isn't your divorce. And so I really hope that we're fulfilling that need. And as always, Morgan and I want to thank you from the bottom of our hearts for listening to our show every week and making this show so successful. It means the world to us, truly.
I know it does. And so our thoughts are with you this week, but also these sweet babies, these twins that were just separated. Our thoughts are with you as well and their family. And remember this, divorce is a marathon. Sometimes it's day by day.
Sometimes it's hour by hour, minute by minute. So
exactly. But regardless, know this, we've got you and you've got this.
And we are here to help you not suck at divorce.
For more support, please join our private communities on Facebook and Patreon. The How Not to Suck at Divorce podcast is executively produced by Andrea Rappaport.